from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, President Trump met with New York Governor Andrew Cuomo yesterday to discuss tax policy, but the president raised his concerns about the Democrats' support for late-term abortion. Both the president and Republican members of Congress continue to publicly push to keep America from going down this path of infanticide. Chairman of the House Republican Conference, Congresswoman Liz Cheney, is here in just a moment. Also, the president pledged that America would not be a socialist country. The comment was directed at new and old members of the Democratic Party, newly elected Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez appeared to be unfazed by the president's pledge as she pushes her Green New Deal. Ken Blackwell is here on that. We'll also hear from FRC's Peter Sprigg on the military's transgender policy. And Planned Parenthood is targeting toddlers with a new sex ed video training series. Former Planned Parenthood employee Monica Klein is here to explain. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T. Perkins. All right, virtually every day for the last week when the House of Representatives has been in session, there has been an attempt to bring the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act up for unanimous consent for a floor vote. Sadly, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who is beholden, her whole party, beholden to the abortion industry, refuses to. And the reason is because Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry funds so many of the Democratic campaigns. Well, listen to what happened on Monday when Republican Congressman Mark Walker of North Carolina tried to bring it up. Listen to cut one.
For what purpose does the gentleman from North Carolina seek recognition?
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that the Committee on Judiciary be discharged from further consideration of H.R. 962, the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, and ask for its immediate consideration in the House.
Under guidelines consistently issued by successive speakers, as recorded in Section 956 of the House Rules and Manual, the chair is constrained not to entertain the request unless it has been cleared by the bipartisan floor and committee leaderships.
If this unanimous consent request cannot be entertained, I urge the Speaker and the Majority Leader to immediately schedule the Born Alive bill so we can stand up and protect the sanctity of
the gentleman has not been recognized for debate.
I find it deeply disturbing that the Democrats are actually defending infanticide or the killing of a baby after it has been born. Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney of Wyoming, who serves as a part of the GOP leadership in the House, she is the chair of the House Republican Conference and serves on several committees, and she's been leading out on this, and she joins us now. Representative Cheney, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you so much, Tony, for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You were one of the first out of the box on this, challenging Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats for their defense of infanticide. Is this not one of those moments where we see such a clear contrast between the two parties?
You know, absolutely. And it's just so striking and heartbreaking to me that there is a contrast. You would think that on an issue as fundamental as ensuring that we're protecting children, you know, babies who've been born, that would not be a partisan issue. You know, it's just to me, the fact that we even have to have this conversation is really, in many ways, heartbreaking.
It is. I mean, we're talking about infanticide. We're talking about children that have been born, that have survived an abortion attempt, and refusing to give them medical care. The president, it's been quite amazing to watch the president being so outspoken on this issue. He brought it up in the State of the Union address. He brought it up last week at the National Prayer Breakfast. And then yesterday, meeting with Governor Cuomo, who was really the lead in pushing this forward in New York on the 46th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. The president called him to task for this as well. I mean, the president is really leading out. And I think it's this is a moment of choosing for America.
Yeah, there's no question, Tony. And, you know, when you're looking at what we're faced with here, which is, you know, nothing short of just pure evil, the idea that the Democrats will not even let this bill come to the floor. You know, we're going to continue day after day to seek unanimous consent and ensure that we do everything we can to fight for the most vulnerable among us, the unborn.
So Liz, what can our listeners do to be helpful on this?
Well, I think making sure that they contact their representatives, across the board, no matter whether we're talking about Republicans or Democrats, call members who may not be the representatives of our listeners, and ensure that everybody is in a situation where they know that this is going to be an issue that people won't forget.
As the conference chair, I mean, you kind of work on the messaging for the Republicans in the House. Now that you're part of the leadership team, you kind of help shape that message. Is this one that you find, broad support for among the ranks of Republicans in the House?
Yeah, there's no question. This is an issue that we feel very strongly about and that we are going to continue to push and continue to fight for. And, should never be in a situation where we're having to have this conversation given what's at stake.
Well, Liz, I know you're off to votes on the House floor. I want to thank you for taking a few moments between the committee and the House floor to join us. But thank you for you've really spoken out in some very strong ways and grateful for your voice on this topic.
Well, thank you. And I'll look forward to being able to come back on again. But I really appreciate it. Thanks for everything you've done to fight on this issue and fight for life.
Absolutely. We look forward to having you back on. Congresswoman Liz Cheney of Wyoming, who is the chairman of the Republican Conference. She's one of the five leaders in the House, and this is the one that four leaders. What they do is, what she does is help shape the message that the Republicans take, in large part driving the messaging and showing the contrast between the two parties. And frankly, I cannot think of an area that, as she said, unfortunately, shows such a clear contrast. The difference between the two parties on this, and it goes back to the party platform. Look at that party platform, because they're just simply walking out what they put in their party platform in 2016. And I'm going to be repetitive here, but this is not just a political issue. This is a moral issue. Now, I want you to hear the president last night. Was discussing this. He was down in Texas, in El Paso, at a rally, and he is talking about this issue. It's refreshing to see the president going on the offense. Let's listen to clip number two.
Democrats are also pushing extreme late term abortion. Children to be ripped from their mother's womb right up until the moment of birth. What's that all about? So in Virginia, the governor stated that he would even allow a newborn baby to come out into the world and wrap the baby and make the baby comfortable and then talk to the mother and talk to the father, and then execute the baby. Execute the baby. Incredible. Millions of innocent, beautiful babies are counting on us to protect them, and we will. That is why last week I called on Congress to immediately pass legislation prohibiting extreme late-term abortion. Many people never even heard. I mean, did you ever hear of anything like this?
That was the president at a rally in Texas, in El Paso. Have you ever heard a president speak so bluntly and boldly on the issue of abortion? This is almost identical to what he did in the third presidential debate in Las Vegas. I was sitting in the audience when he took on Hillary Clinton. This and look, someone say, some critics out there would probably say, well, the president's just pandering. I'm telling you, he's not. Not on this. He's like, it's interesting. I was talking to some people about it. It's like, I know that he, in the past, supported Planned Parenthood. He was on the other side of this issue, but I don't think he ever thought about it. And so when he entered into the political arena, and he had to consider this because he was looking to social conservatives, evangelicals for support, he had to look at all these different issues for the first time. You know, not as a businessman in New York building buildings who didn't really care about this stuff. He had to consider it. And my take, based on my conversations, is that it was like, wow, I never understood this. This is horrific. And so he speaks in terms not with talking points and, well-honed phrases that have come forth from politicians in the past. He talks about it as someone who has, for the first time, come to an understanding of what this is all about. And for one, I am extremely grateful for this president, and that he is not relenting. In fact, as I mentioned, I was in the White House the day before the State of the Union address, meeting a small group meeting with the president, the vice president, and his speech writers and team to talk about the State of the Union address and themes. And he brought this up when he almost the first thing when he came into the room. Of course, I encouraged him to use it in his speech as well, to show that contrast between where the two parties stand on this issue. And thankfully, that's exactly what he's done. And he's done so in a very powerful and persuasive manner. Now, look, what's happened in the last week is the president's polling numbers have gone up. Not that this is why they're doing it. It was never even entertained in the conversation. But I'm telling you, he's in line with where the American people are, the vast majority. Only 21% support what the governor of New York and the governor of Virginia are defending and promoting. The president's numbers have gone up to the highest level of his presidency, while Cuomo's continues to go down. Thankfully. And by the way, he was meeting with the president to complain that wealthy people are leaving New York because of the president's tax policy. I find that very interesting. The reason they're leaving is because they have to pay such high taxes in New York. That's why. Bad policies in New York. The president's tax policy has created thousands of new jobs and put more money in the pockets of families. But that's another topic for another day. Look, pray for this president. He is boldly advancing the sanctity of human life. And I'm going to support him. If he continues to do this, I will, support these policies. We should pray for him. We should encourage him as he takes these bold stands for life. This is a moment of choosing for America. It really is. Will we choose life and the prosperity and the blessing that flows from that, or will we choose a culture of death and where that leads? It's a choice we have to make. All right, don't go away. Coming back, lots more Washington Watch to come. We're still going to have Ken Blackwell talking about the new Green Deal. But next, Peter Sprigg joins me in the studio to talk about the transgender policy in the military that is about to be implemented as a result of the court saying it can go in place until it's fully litigated. That's next. Don't go away. More Washington Watch right after this.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right. Before 2016, persons who identified as transgender were generally disqualified from military service. Now, we've talked about this before. You don't have a right to serve in the military. The military sets standards, and you've got to meet those standards. Well, in 2016, during the last year of the Obama administration, they changed that policy to allow transgendered individuals to serve. Well, in July of 2017, the new Trump administration announced that they would return to the previous policy. That set off a battle in the courts. My next guest, Peter Sprigg, Senior Fellow for Policy Studies here at the Family Research Council, has produced an 18-page report entitled Department of Defense on Why Those with Gender Dysphoria Are Disqualified from Military Service. And he joined us to explain the status of the current state of affairs in the military and why the current policy adopted by the Trump administration makes the most sense. Peter, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Okay. You have produced a new publication, which, by the way, folks, it's at tonyperkins.com. The current state of affairs, this was four lawsuits challenged the Trump administration's policy of going back to what it used to be,
right,
prior to Obama changing it at the 11th hour on his way out the door. The Supreme Court stepped in and said the Trump administration can go forward with the policy until it makes its way through the courts. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. There were these four lawsuits challenging the policy. They issued their challenge as soon as President Trump announced his new policy in July of 2017, even though there wasn't a written policy in place yet.
They were against it, even though they didn't know what it was.
Right. And so the new policy of this administration was actually announced in March of 2018 by Defense Secretary Mattis, then Secretary Mattis. And
which was actually a pretty exhaustive 44-page report and recommendation. So this
exactly.
wasn't just he took what the president said in July, did a thorough evaluation of it, and then came with recommendations.
Yes, exactly. And most of this new paper is just a summary of what was found in that, a slightly shorter summary of what was found in that 44-page paper. But that whole policy, even though, you know, they had fleshed it out, was put on hold while these courts had issued preliminary injunctions against it. And now the U.S. Supreme Court, well, the D.C. Circuit in one case, the U.S. Supreme Court in two other cases, has said, no, this policy can go into effect while we're completing the litigation. So they lifted the preliminary injunction.
Okay, give us the, I wouldn't be confused with the Cliff Notes, give us the Peter Notes on the policy recommended by then Secretary of Defense James Mattis and what he is recommending that the military do on this issue.
Well, first of all, it's a bit complicated. We had an earlier paper we wrote sort of laying out the terms of the policy. One thing to understand is that the policy restricts people who have been diagnosed with gender dysphoria, which is a mental disorder, according to the American Psychiatric Association. People who have this, who identify as transgender but have not received a diagnosis are not affected by the new policy, but they are required to serve in accordance with their biological sex, the same as any other service member.
But there's a reason for that.
Well, right. And this is one of the reasons, one of the three, there were three basically areas that were cited in justifying the what I call the Trump-Mattis policy. One is mental health. The data shows that those with gender dysphoria also have high levels of other mental health problems, which is a challenge for the military. A second is physical health, and particularly the fact that people who go through hormone therapy and surgery face downtime that limits their deployability. So this is a threat to military readiness. And the third is that there are sex-based standards within the military which are designed on the basis of the biological and anatomical differences between men and women. And it doesn't make sense to apply standards based on gender identity instead of actual biological sex. And those are the three areas that support the Trump-Mattis policy.
And in part, I'm going to go with that last one for just a moment, the sex-based standards where your biological sex, you have to, I mean, if you're a male, even though you say you're a female, but you've got your biology and your anatomy is male, it would violate the privacy of others if you're a male and you want to go into the female quarters.
Exactly. This is because under the Obama policy, to adopt the gender identity of the opposite sex, you are not required to have any surgical alteration to your body. And so these separation of quarters for sleeping quarters and showers and locker rooms and so forth is based on the biological, the anatomical differences between men and women. For somebody who has the anatomy of a man to go into the female quarters violates the privacy of those other women, even if that person happens to identify as female, if they still have their male anatomy.
So this policy is put forward currently. I mean, it's still in the courts, but it is going into effect. This is about keeping the military focused on its mission of fighting and winning wars, not being a laboratory of social experimentation.
Well, that's exactly right. And the irony is that the people who supported the Obama policy, if you read between the lines of their argument, they're not actually claiming that these people don't have limitations on their ability to be deployed and so forth. What they're saying is, well, the military can work around those limitations. There's such a small number that it's not going to affect the whole force. But the thing is, we don't do that for people who have other comparable conditions. We don't make exceptions to the mental health standards and physical health standards for other people. And so why should we do it for this group of people?
All right, Peter, we're out of time. And that means, that music means we have to stop.
Okay.
Now, you don't lose your chair, but we do have to stop. Very interesting and very important. And obviously, as this makes its way through the court, we're going to be focusing on this more. But a very good piece of work here in this analysis, and we'll make sure people have a chance to get a copy of it at TonyPerkins.com. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, folks, again, you can check it out, TonyPerkins.com. Download your own copy and know what the Trump administration's up to. All right, don't go away. Coming back with more after this.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, recently, Planned Parenthood and several other partner groups launched a new YouTube channel with sex education videos designed to target toddlers. I mean, children as young as 4 years old. It's called Amaze Junior. Monica Klein, my next guest, was once a Planned Parenthood sex educator until she had a total change of heart, and now she works to expose everything she once advocated. Monica, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thanks for having me.
All right, Planned Parenthood has just launched this new YouTube channel with sex education videos designed for children as young as four, called Amaze Junior. And I want our listeners to hear just a brief preview of it featuring very young children, which I think will give them some idea what this is all about. Let's play clip number three.
Where do babies come from?
My friends want to play doctor. Is that okay?
Why is pink a girl's color?
Wait, what? Moms make eggs?
What if I don't want to give a hug?
Is it weird that I don't feel like a boy?
Dad, what does bisexual mean?
Why does Keisha have two dads?
How do two dads make a baby?
What is a vulva?
What's sex?
Little kids, big questions. Amaze Junior is here to help.
Wow. All right, Monica, what's behind this?
You know, what's behind this education is Planned Parenthood and many other organizations similar to Planned Parenthood, working with Planned Parenthood as well. They really want to infiltrate our children. They're doing it through, obviously, media, YouTube, as well as in the schools. And really, their main goal is to really keep parents out of the picture. Now, when you watch these videos and you hear them, they talk about parental involvement, but that's just rhetoric. What they really want is to teach these children and to break down their inhibitions to begin to believe the values of Planned Parenthood, the values of comprehensive sex education. Now, when I was an educator, for over 10 years, and I worked in collaboration with Planned Parenthood. And at the end of my career in that family planning realm, I was the training manager for family planning for all of Texas and New Mexico. And I would train Planned Parenthood as well. And one of the consistent things that Planned Parenthood always said is parents are a barrier to service. They knew that once parents knew that their children were getting access to this education or even going to their clinic, they knew that parents would naturally protect their children and keep them from going to Planned Parenthood, which would hurt Planned Parenthood's bottom line. So by educating children that sex is as easy as talking about dental hygiene or any other activity and kind of making it more of a recreational fun and break down inhibitions, they are changing the values of children so much so that they're actually creating a division between parents and the children. And it's done so subtly that many parents who naturally feel a little nervous to talk to their children about these subjects, you know, they start to say, well, they're the experts, so they must know better to teach our children. That is not true. Our children really need parents to be their greatest advocates and their primary sex education teachers. And it's up to a parent and family values to decide what they should be teaching the children about sex, marriage, and relationships.
I could not agree more, Monica. I think you're absolutely right. What I see this as, besides pushing a very liberal agenda to indoctrinate children, is it's a marketing ploy in that they want to get these children into the Planned Parenthood pipeline as young as possible by exposing them to stuff that looks cute and cuddly, and even having conversations about teen pregnancy and all of these things. And in some of these videos, actually talking about staying away from nonprofits as the crisis pregnancy centers to draw them into the Planned Parenthood clinics. I see this as the lifeline for their business.
It is the lifeline of their business. Like I said, if they can infiltrate the minds of our children in schools and through media and even convince parents that they should allow their children to follow the values that Planned Parenthood is putting on in these videos and through their education, then they have customers for life. Not only do they have customers that are becoming sexually active at a young age, accessing birth control through their clinics, accessing education through their clinics, accessing STD testing through their clinics, but then eventually it is also to normalize the abortion that will eventually be a part of these children's lives. So it becomes this lifelong customer. So that's their goal. They're going to create lifelong customers. And their rhetoric sounds so, as you know, with liberal agendas, their rhetoric sounds so positive. And they add a little, just enough truth for parents to say, oh, we do need to teach our kids this, or I do need to let them teach this. But the reality is that they're twisting the truth, and we need to be really careful about what is being taught to our children.
Monica, we're up against a break, but I do want to ask you another question. If you can hold on for just a moment, I want to bring you back on the other side of the question, because I think it's one thing to alert parents to what's happening out there, but I want you to tell them what they can do, kind of going into parents' rights. I mean, these Planned Parenthood wants to talk about the rights that children and teens have. Let's talk about the rights that parents have to protect their children. So hold on with me. We'll be right back. Folks, don't go away. I'm going to finish my conversation with Monica on the other side of this. This is disturbing stuff. You need to be equipped not only knowing what's going on, but knowing what to do. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. More to come right after this.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy, from unicorns to the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. In FRC's analysis, 10 Myths on Abortion, join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to our other free resources, go to frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks for sticking around. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com, and Monica is still with us. And I wanted to finish this conversation because I think this is extremely important for you as parents to know what is going on. Monica, thanks so much for holding over the break.
Sure.
Monica Klein, a former Planned Parenthood sex educator. We're discussing the issue of Planned Parenthood's new YouTube videos that are targeting children ages 4 to 9, trying to get them in the pipeline for Planned Parenthood, as we were talking about. But, Monica, I really want to – obviously, parents need to be aware of this. They need to know that there is an ulterior motive here by Planned Parenthood. But what are the rights of parents when it comes to not just these videos but the curriculum that they're pushing in the schools? What do the parents have the right to do?
The parents obviously have the right to be involved in their children's media, what they're watching, involved in their schools. I think a lot of times when I've spoken to parents, their response to me is, we didn't know we could talk to our kids about these kind of things. In the Spanish-speaking communities, I've gotten the same response. We didn't know we could talk to them about these things or about sex or about relationships, which has really, really surprised me. Now, the rights are that parents are the primary advocate and teacher and authority over our own children. So just because a quote-unquote expert from your school or from a clinic is trying to circumvent your values and your teachings to your children, they do not have the right to do that. And so I think the first thing I want to tell parents is, what are your values? You need to think about, where do I stand? What do I want for my children? I asked my own son, how do we speak to parents about these kind of things? He was a teenager at the time. He's only 19 now. He said, Mom, we don't want videos. We don't want those kind of things. We want to know what you want for us. What are your expectations? That's what teenagers want. They want to hear what their parents think about them and what comes from their heart. What do you expect from us? And, you know, and my son.
By the way, Monica, let me stop you there for just a moment, because I just want to validate that point, that actually the polling data, the survey data that we've seen repeatedly actually shows, despite, you know, the kids kind of want to act like they're not listening to their parents, the parents are the number one source that children trust and they want to hear from them. They're not going to roll it out and say, I want to hear from you, mom and dad, but they do. And so parents need to take the initiative to do that, not waiting for their children to open the door.
And this is number one. This is why I started with this. Number one is that parents need to have positive communication with their kids. Now, that doesn't mean that they run over you and tell you everything. That means that you start these conversations with your children. Prepare yourself for having these conversations with your children. You're going to get eye rolls. They're going to say they don't want to talk about it. That's okay. That's natural. And so you're going to just, you know, I think what I always tell parents is, think about what you want to say before it even happens, because you never want to react in anger. You don't want to be upset. You want to have a calm conversation. There's nothing, truly, there is nothing controversial about sexuality. God created it. It's okay for us, especially parents, to talk to their children about this. So that's number one. Number two, I always tell parents that, you know, we always tell our children secrets are not good. You know, if someone tells you to keep a secret, please don't keep it. Your parents are your greatest advocate. I'm the one that's going to protect you. Planned Parenthood loves secrets. Predators love secrets. And so that's the other thing, is that parents need to know that organizations like Planned Parenthood, sometimes the schools, they want to keep secrets from parents because they believe that parents are a barrier to service. So they don't want parents involved, just like a predator would not want parents involved. And that should always be a number one key to children and parents, that if they don't want a parent involved in their child's life, then something is wrong. So number two, other than having great communication skills with your children, being on the offense and not the defense in our culture and with your own children, is be involved in the school. If your child is going to a public school, you have the right to know everything that they're teaching. Is sex education being taught in English class? Is it being taught throughout the day? What kind of values are being spoken? I was the kind of mom that I did go over there, and I asked those questions. The response was from the principal, no parent has come here to ask what kind of sex education we provide. You're the only parent that's walked into this school and asked. Now, that's really sad that there was only one parent doing that. And I even spoke, and I asked, who's teaching it? I want to talk to them as well. How are you going to respond if a child asks this question? What kind of value are you going to place on this? And it's amazing, you know, what these teachers are teaching. And we need to know that a lot of this education is being taught to teachers in their teacher conferences. Not all teachers agree with it, but it is becoming an expectation that sex education is not just during the time that they teach sex education or they bring in Planned Parenthood, but they're integrating it into everything. History class, math class, what teachers are putting up on their doors, the posters, it's everywhere. And our children are being surrounded by it. And so if a child says, I don't agree with that, all of a sudden the rhetoric, the liberal rhetoric against them in the school is, then you are trampling on women's rights. You are trampling on our rights, on our sexual rights. And they're left alone, and they need parents to be there and advocate for them. And not just at home, but in the schools as well. The other thing is getting involved with your school board. You have to get into leadership. You have got to be part of leadership, and you have to have a close relationship with your state representatives, your senators, your governors. You have to do that. You have to be involved, because so much of this is happening, you know, on levels that parents don't realize, and it's infiltrating the schools. We're having a huge problem with that here in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, it's a level. And what we need more mama bears out there that aren't going to let them come and get their cubs is what we need. Monica, we're out of time, but I want to thank you. And this is a conversation we're going to have some more of. And I want to thank you for joining us and look forward to talking with you more in the future.
I would love the opportunity to speak on this some more. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me here today.
All right, Monica, thanks so much. Hey, folks, to find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. This is something that I'm passionate about as a parent, but I want you to be passionate about protecting your children from the deceptive and devious agenda of the the abortion industry, but Planned Parenthood in particular. So Monica Klein, great resource, former Planned Parenthood sex educator. You can find out more. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Okay. We were going to have Ken Blackwell on talking about the kind of the new Green Deal, but the House votes have wrapped up. So we're going to actually get a Congressman, Paul Gosar, who's been outspoken on this. Arizona representative represents the 4th district there in Arizona. So we're going to discuss this this initiative that Cortez is putting forward that essentially moves America into a socialist country, but would basically bankrupt us. Joining us now is Arizona Congressman Paul Gosar. He serves on the House Committee on Natural Resources, and he's been out front really denouncing and unveiling the details of this Green New Deal. Dr. Gosar, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on, Tony.
You see this as a dangerous attack on America.
Oh, absolutely. When you're taking away and making the less of us, they're more dependent and raising prices on fuels, taking away flights on airplanes, taking and degrading our healthcare system to, the Medicare for All model, jeopardizing it all the way across the board. The Green New Deal actually subjugates people to victims instead of empowering people, which we should be doing, which is the American way.
I mean, isn't this really kind of trying to plunge America into being a third world country?
It is. It absolutely is. You know, you see this move to having electricity and renewable energy, but yet this group doesn't want to invest anything in what it takes to actually go there. You know, the batteries need these rare earths that are now 100% dictated by China. And if you think you're paying more at the pump now, just wait till China gets their hands into that. So, I mean, from the very get-go, this is actually plunging us back instead of being the leader into a follower.
Now, Dr. Gosar, you missed one thing. You kind of went down the litany of issues that this would affect. But now Chick-fil-A might be in favor of this, but certainly McDonald's is not, because it would require us getting rid of cows.
That's exactly right. You know, I put my request in for that mythical animal called a unicorn because it's the only animal I know that doesn't produce methane. but very few people will be able to have that along with leprechauns and their lucky charms. It is sad that we're going down this application instead of being forthright and looking at if carbon is our problem, how about having a dynamic interface with our forestry, which is actually the biggest carbon sequestration trap that we can actually do. But we continually see the other side bombard our forests by degrading how we take care of it and manage it.
I mean, I see this whole agenda. I mean, this is just this is global warming 201. I mean, this is just the advance of what we've seen for, a couple of decades now. It's creating this huge problem that's out there with a, unrealistic solution, but it diverts attention and energy away from that which we can actually fix. There's no way to fix this. There's no way. I mean, this is just it's a waste of time. But yet it diverts energy, it diverts focus away from real problems that we should be solving.
Well, and that's a great point, Tony, because that shows that the folks that are proposing this aren't here to actually fix things. You know, it makes common sense that you need carbon in the footprint called photosynthesis, where, plants take carbon in, they produce oxygen, they take dirty water in, and they produce minerals and clean water. So they're not serious about the science. And, I think all of us want to have the stewardship and have shown the stewardship of our environment. You know, where is the same holdings from China, India, and the likes? You know, there are only so many things that we can actually take care of. And I think from this standpoint, what this basically does is it takes us from being the leader in solutions to being a follower.
Let me take just one aspect, Dr. Gosar, on this and kind of break this down for our listeners. Now, I know none of them, I doubt any of them would be in support of Congresswoman Cortez's proposal here. But let's talk about energy, fossil fuels, okay? America, for the first time in probably five decades, has become an exporter of oil, leading exporter. I mean, we're selling our oil. We're making money on that. We're no longer dependent upon the Middle East, and you know, and which is, has a whole host of issues with it. But look at what our economy is doing. Now, I know we've had tax cuts and everything, but we've got energy independence. Our economy is humming. Businesses are creating jobs. We cut off fossil fuels, all of that stops.
Oh, absolutely, and it's even more so than that. We have people across our countries, across this world, that have actually now were dependent upon Russia and China for their energy sector. And now they're coming to the United States so that we can reward good behavior and have a positive outlook onto our, you know, our foreign affairs matters. You know, this isn't going away. We're going to need, you know, all the fossil fuels that we've got in the portfolio. I think the average person believes, Tony, like I do, that it's an all the above. If you put all your eggs in one basket, when they break, you're right. Lost. And so when you actually use all the above, it extends our resources. It still allows us to be the technology and entrepreneur giant that we are. And we get people to start looking at the capitalistic aspect of doing things right. You know, we're the most philanthropic country the world has ever seen because of those very tenets.
Right. And Dr. Gozar, this also discounts or discredits, I should say, America's ingenuity, that we will create the new technology that will move us beyond a total dependence on the fossil fuels. But to simply cut them off is like slamming on the brakes and prevents us from reaching that next level of technology.
It's exactly right. When you look at the increase in consumption of our fossil fuels, we also see at the same time a reduction in the carbon that's emitted. So, you know, there's a balance here. And, you know, it's always when you start seeing the credit of advancement, you see these groups not wanting to see the average person being empowered, that American citizen that's empowered to make solutions instead of being victimized. But that's what the other side needs. They need victims that are dependent upon the government to make their decisions. The last time I looked, it's not all the great applications and ideas come from the government. In fact, very few. They come from America, that entrepreneur, that capitalistic application. And the business model is moving. You got to have good energy, cheap energy, affordable energy, and that's what America is actually now known for.
You are absolutely right. When the government wants to solve problems, they generally look to the private sector to solve those problems. Government regulates, it doesn't create. And that's why this would be a muzzle around our business and industry. Congressman, we're out of time, but I want to thank you. I know you're joining us right off the House floor in the cloakroom. I want to thank you for taking a few moments. We're going to talk more about this. I'm hoping it doesn't get traction, but it's going to be out there, and we're going to talk about it. So thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for bringing it up, Tony. Thanks so much.
All right, Congressman Paul Gozar of Arizona. All right, folks, out of time. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, you know, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.